Ladies and gentlemen, I pity your having to look directly into the sun. I have it on my back, which is a more pleasant position to be in. When my old friend John Smith and my other old friend Louis Hankey told me they had gotten together and wanted me to come out here, I told them I would go any place, meet anybody, discuss anything, if they would buy me a ticket. So that's what they did. I laid down one more condition, and that is they'd have to think up something to celebrate. So that's the reason we're celebrating today, an auspicious occasion of having the 200,000th book. Maybe that would have happened anyhow, but I like to take credit for it. After I got here, I found that the library was doubling its space, beginning immediately. I'm not used to that kind of business, of building a building and then doubling it in 3 years by just adding on to it. In New York, we keep a building for 35 years, then we tear it down. So you're making progress out here in improving upon the way we do things in the East. I call my few remarks today a base for many things. And that's the way I would like to regard this library, as a base for many things. And let us think a few moments about some of these things for which what you have done so far is a base. It has already been indicated that you have a base in an undergraduate library, not a great library yet, but a base on which to build a great undergraduate library. So that is the first thing that you now have a base for. Of course, you will have a base for housing the collections when you get your new building built. I should like to take as the next step that you're building the base for a great graduate library. Now, in the early stages of a library such as this, you have to rely on interlibrary loan. You have to run your trucks daily over to UCLA to pick up books and to deliver books that have been used. You have to do many things to substitute for having a great research collection. With microfilm, of course, it's going to be much easier to have a research collection because any library with the money and the staff with a good judgment to pick books can build a great research library in microfilm. But these old fluddy-duddy professors don't like to use microfilm, so for them you have to get the books. But if you get the microfilm, then the students who don't have such prejudices as the oldsters have will begin to use them, will begin to produce books based on them. I should like to think also of the library as a base for community enterprise. I have always regretted that there's not been a tradition in this country of libraries collecting local material and thus becoming a pioneer in the development of local pride in the local past of a community. I like to see libraries get interested in the things that are going on in their state, the things that have gone on in the past in their state, which makes it great, and sometimes even localize that to a narrower area, geographically speaking, and become a genuine resource for the study of local history, and local history in a very broad sense, in the sense of the literature that's been written in that area, in the sense of the industries that have been built, the ways of life that have been developed, the culture that has been created, the art, the literature, the science, the music, and so forth, of the community. I think of these as things on which to build greatly from the base we now have. I like to think also of our having a library system in this country. We do have a developing library system in this country. That is, by this I mean that we have a great Library of Congress, which is sort of the hub of the wheel. We have other great libraries. Many of them have published their catalogs so that you know what is in them. All of them participate in interlibrary loan. All of them have microfilming activities so that their material can be made widely accessible. And we're gradually welding these libraries into a real network of library service so that anybody, anywhere, at any time can get anything he wants, either from one or the other. This switching system is not complete as yet, and we must do many things to complete it, but we're well on our way toward the building of a network. Now, any library, at least one that has reached 200,000 volumes, is bound to have some books that no other library in the land has. I don't know about the Vicar of Wakefield. It may be that there's some other copies of the first edition, the first issue of this, in this country. But I venture to bet that you've got some books in this building, right here, that no other library in the land has. And if you put those books in your catalog, and you make your catalog known, it opens up that additional material to the use of everybody in the wide land. So that improving this network is one of the bases to which we must give attention in the near future. This is going to require a lot of work. The computer, fortunately, has come along recently, and it is through the computer, I believe, that we're going to be able to realize this noble ideal. The computer can be fed the data on material, the author, the title, the catalog card number. It can be fed the information on edition, on language, and so forth. And then, by use of the retrieval mechanisms built into the computer, you can quickly locate the single copy of a book anywhere in the country by using this bibliographical mechanism and this computer mechanism. So I think in building this kind of a system, we must regard even a library as small as this and as distant from the great centers as this. Los Angeles, I guess, is one of the great centers. Maybe we better skip that. A library as small as this can be hooked into a whole system, a network of service. There are a few other things that this is the basis for, which I would not want to neglect. This is a base for experimenting in the use and expansion of the use of audiovisual materials. I have long been an addict of audiovisual materials. I think we must have more television tapes that we can show people, particularly for contemporary history. I think we need more motion picture films, and those are of all kinds, illustrative of all periods of history, of all art and all literature. I think we must have more of the visual aids of one kind and another, display mechanisms, copies of photographs, copies of paintings that are made available to people to help them in the visual side of their education. And here again, anyone who has this material can hook in to the national network. I think, as I go further, of certain library problems which must be solved. I switch now from the service to the public. Although the solution of the library problems adds to the capacity to give service to the public. Each library, it seems to me, is an experiment station in the solution of library problems. One of our great problems, which nobody has paid any attention to so far, is this, that the books printed since 1870, or thereabouts, when we began the use of wood pulp paper to print our books, are going to be dust piles within 100 years. So we've got to think of the problem of how we're going to preserve these books. One bright suggestion was made by a group of librarians who were appointed to a committee to work on this problem. They said, well, the books of that category, you ought to put them in a sub-zero temperature in a vault and not let anybody see them except for the purpose of microfilming them. Well, that may be one solution, but it doesn't appeal to me as the best solution. How would you like to put the Vicar Wakefield in a deep freeze and it would take it days to thaw out before you could read it? And then you wouldn't be allowed to read it. You'd be allowed only to read a microfilm of it. We'd like to do better than that. So I would like to see each library of this size, at any rate, do some work in this field. Maybe it is selective microfilming that we want to engage in, but do a quality of microfilming that will allow for a Xerox reproduction of a book or for the making of printing plates and the reprinting of books. I see a great job ahead of us of reprinting these books, which otherwise will deteriorate. They will deteriorate anyhow. The present physical specimens will. I would like to see a great program mounted, and this, to make any sense, will have to be done on a nationwide, probably a worldwide, cooperative basis, because the world of books is really a worldwide world, if I may use that term. There are many problems yet to be solved in the cataloging of books. I said this library had some books that no others had. This means that it ought to supply its cataloging copy to a network so it can be made available to everybody. This can be done through having the Library of Congress verify the call numbers that are put on the book, the classification and cataloging indicia that we normally use. This library uses the LC system. I think of this as a means of opening up our accesses, opening up access to our collections to a greater degree. I'd like to talk about one more big problem, and then I'll let you stop squinting at the sun. This problem is a very delicate and difficult one. It is the problem Let me explain it by telling you what we do in library work. In library work, when we want to put books on the shelves, we have to make a number which is different from every other number that any other book has, and which defines that book's location on the shelf. But if we did only that with our numbers, the best way to do it would be by size of the books. Give each one an arbitrary number and shelve it there. But this does not complete our obligation. Our obligation, we feel, is to put books on the shelves according to a system. Now, what is the system? How is it defined? The system is defined in terms of a logical organization of all human knowledge. Jefferson, one of our greatest men in this country, one of the greatest minds ever developed in this land, invented a system of classification of books. He based it largely on Bacon's classification of things, ideas, and so on, feelings. And that was used by the Library of Congress for many years because Jefferson's library became the basis of the Library of Congress after the British burned the Capitol in the War of 1812. Now, this system of classification of knowledge has never been satisfactory. One of the great worries I had at the Library of Congress, I never discussed it with Lloyd Hankin because he couldn't have thrown any light on it. One of my greatest worries there was that we weren't classifying knowledge adequately. We weren't getting down to the fine points enough. We weren't breaking knowledge down into enough classifications and subclassifications. New elements of knowledge would come into the picture, like atomic energy, and we didn't have any pigeonhole for it in our system. And we wouldn't create a pigeonhole for it until a load of books came in that made it necessary for it to do so in order for us to catalog them. I maintain, and I maintain today, that as soon as a new subject appears on the horizon, as soon as a man has a new thought about a new branch of knowledge, we ought to classify it in library terms. It's quite true that the original classification may not be adequate. We may have misunderstood the idea. The idea may take a change to another course. But we ought immediately and for thereafter perpetually to revise and keep up with the flow of knowledge. Now, this is too big an enterprise for the Library of Congress. I failed to have Congress give enough money to do this. I used to discuss it with the chief of cataloging at the Library of Congress, and he said, well, I can't do this. I haven't got enough catalogers to catalog the books I've got, according to the old system. I can't take on this new thing, and I had to remain quiet. I had to agree that he was correct. But if we have all the catalogers of this country organized as a pool, all contributing to some designated task to get this knowledge under control, all of them put in touch with some groups of scientists and scholars in other fields, so that we can work out these problems of classification, I'm convinced a great intellectual contribution will be made to our knowledge of knowledge itself, to our ability to classify knowledge, to our ability to put books where they belong on the shelves, so that when scholars go along the shelves looking for things, they will be in the proper order, so that when students are searching, they will find books in a logical order. These are some of the bases that you have here in this great university library. And I want to congratulate you on the stage you have reached and to wish you well in the future. Before I end, I must make reference to the fact that Lyndon Johnson was here. You know, when he and I were boys, we used to hear one another across two counties calling hogs. I've always admired his voice. It has a carrying quality that you can hear from here to downtown Los Angeles. I am sorry that he isn't here today to speak to you. I'm sort of a substitute for him in a way. I come from Texas, too, so I can speak with this levity. It's a great pleasure for me to be with you here today and to say these few words to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Evans. We certainly appreciated your talk. And